crossbench Senator Jacqui Lambie has threatened to pull up stumps and withdraw her support for expanding the cashless welfare card trials. That's after the government moved with the help of Labor to divert a $4 billion education investment fund to disaster relief. Senator Lambie attacked Labor for striking what she says is a dirty deal, with the coalition declaring the opposition had sold its soul. Labor's decision was made at a special shadow cabinet meeting on Wednesday night. A short time ago, I caught up with Liberal MP Trent Zimmerman and Labor MP Kimberley Kitching, and I started off by asking Kimberley Kitching why the funding decision didn't go to caucus.
Well, it did go to caucus, and remember there was extensive consultation over many months about this, and certainly there has been discussion within the ALP about these measures. I think that one of the propelling points really has been the recent bushfires in northern New South Wales and in southeast Queensland. So people are aware that we do really need, you know, risk mitigation in terms of natural disasters.
But you're taking money from education to do that?
Yeah, but some of that is remaining within education. So $50 million is going to TAFE in a 50-50 funding model with the states, and $50 million is going into disaster relief.
It's a bit odd, isn't it, for Labor to be taking money from education?
Well, remember, what we have seen, though, is a government. We established the fund in 2009. We've also seen a government that has wanted to get rid of it since 2014. So in their, let me think, their first term of government, they've been trying to shut it down. It hasn't made any payments in recent years. The government has chosen not to spend any of that money. So what we're seeing is this pattern of the government sort of moving money around or taking money out of other funds in order to do, to do particular projects. And so really, this is just another example of the government doing that. But if a fund isn't going to be used, and we know that people are going to have problems getting insurance, for example, or there are going to be natural disasters, is it better to have some of that money being spent on those items, such as, you know, building flood levees, for example? And some people might say, if money's just sitting there, maybe it's better to actually have it spent where people really, really need it.
So. Trent Zimmerman, Senator Lambie's not happy. In fact, she says she won't support your welfare reform there in relation to this.
Well, Kimberley's right. This has been a long-standing policy of the government, in fact, dating back to that 2014 budget, and we haven't had the numbers in the Senate to achieve it. I would correct one thing Kimberley said. It has been dispersing funds because we remain committed to projects that Labor had committed to beforehand, so there was still money being dispersed up to 2018, I think, but obviously we made no new funding commitments out of the fund.
So you've really burnt Senator Lambie, both sides.
But we have to make decisions about what's good policy. And
why is it good policy to take money away from education?
And because the government is determining where you need to spend the money most, and this is actually setting up a long-term fund which will support Australians in the most dire of circumstances when there are natural disasters. And for the reasons that Kimberley outlined, there is obviously a critical need to make sure that we can help Australians when they're most in need.
Let's talk about today's drought announcement, but where did that come from? Was the Prime Minister spooked that Alan Jones has turned on him?
Well, the government's obviously been considering a review of the farm household assistance.
And then suddenly on Thursday.
And that's been refined during the course of the week. But we obviously see supporting drought-affected farmers as something that we will continue to review constantly to look at ways which we can do it better. And the key thing with the farm household assistance program is that we had made clear that we wanted to make it more generous, and today was a continuation of that.
But 600 farmers have been taken off the scheme in the last 2 years. So what's going to happen with them? Are they going to be put back on it? I mean, this is the funding, the increase. So, I mean, what are you going to do with those people? It's too late for them.
Well, let's be quite clear. The review recommended that the four-year limit on funding through the allowance be maintained. It is not meant to be ongoing social welfare. It is effectively a transitional support, not just in circumstances of drought. Under Labor, it was 3 years. We've made it 4 years. We're now making it.
But why not uncap it during a drought?
Well, because it is not just simply about providing support for people affected by the drought. But what we have done is said, rather than it being 4 years in your entire life, which was what the old scheme was, it's now 4 years out of every 10. You obviously have effective effectively the exit payments, which are up to $13,000. We're also simplifying it, making it easier for people to use. And I think they're really important reforms.
Okay.
Well, yes, we've had a drought coordinator, a drought envoy, a drought summit, a drought review. I mean, but no real action.
Oh, that is so untrue, Kimberly. $7 billion worth of action.
Well, hang on a minute.
$7 billion worth of action.
And how much of that $7 billion are farmers seeing? Trent Zimmerman, can't just use the round number without telling the facts.
Well, it's true. Well, the facts are that we have a three-pronged strategy. Firstly, the states and the Commonwealth reach an agreement about who would be responsible.
Sure, and the National Farmers Federation has been out, even I think in the last sort of half an hour, saying it's not good enough.
Well, can I say what we are actually doing in light of Kimberly's comment?
All right, I've got your talking points. I've seen them.
Well, I didn't bring them with me, so maybe you could share them. But look, I mean, it is important to recognise that we are providing direct financial assistance to farmers. In addition to the farm allowance, there's also direct payments of $3,000 to farmers. We're supporting communities because it's not just the farmers, it's the communities they live in. And of course, a big slab of that $7 billion is for the Future Fund, because we recognise that we have to try and avoid the severity of droughts affecting so severely farmers. And I think it's actually a really positive development. We're actually thinking ahead.
All right.
There's so many things I could say, Patricia.
All right, we're going to pause because there are other issues as well. Let's talk about Medivac, because Trent, Home Affairs Minister Peter Dutton has claimed Australian war veterans want refugee medical evacuation laws scrapped. He's checked with every war veteran.
Well, I have not been involved in his consultations.
It's a bit of an odd statement, is it?
Well, I think what is clear is that we went to an election with a policy to repeal the Medivac legislation, and that's what we're getting on with doing. And I hope that the Senate will support that.
Okay, but clearly murderers and paedophiles are not coming into Australia, are they?
Well, there are six cases that Peter Dutton has spoken about already where he had wanted those people to be rejected, but they couldn't because essentially the security test for coming in under Medivac is a lower threshold than even the test you have coming here as a tourist. So there are circumstances where the government would prefer people not to come because of their own personal character issues that are coming through because of the Medivac laws.
Are they?
No, and in fact, Peter Dutton exercised a ministerial discretion that still exists under these laws and refused entry to the father of someone who did need medical
attention. Okay, that's one case, but I'm referring to what Trent has just raised.
I mean, the fact is that discretion under the law, the discretion the minister has, still exists. They are government-appointed. They are government-appointed doctors. You get to control who's on that panel of doctors who makes a decision. You also have, overlying that, and as it should be, in my view, the minister should have a discretion, and that's why that is in that legislation. The legislation is obviously working because we can see that Peter Dutton recently didn't allow someone, used his discretion to refuse someone a visa to come into Australia, who was the father of someone.
But you have to concede that the threshold is lower under Medivac than it is for other visa passes.
Is it lower under Medivac?
It's a case. So they get to come on shore if they need. Do we all believe in the dignity of human beings? I would say yes. And part of that dignity is to be able to receive medical treatment if one needs it. We would think that was a standard God-given kind of right, because we live in a very lucky country.
But you accept in some circumstances the government
where they are on Manus and Nauru. Yes, of course I accept that.
So it's not a God-given right then. There is limitations.
No, but if they need medical treatment and we have a duty of care to those people, they should be able to come on shore to receive that treatment.
But with some exceptions.
If the medical treatment is not available on Manus and Nauru, they can come on shore, receive the treatment. Once they have the treatment, then they go back. That's what the law says. The law also says that the minister retains his discretion, which he or she can exercise, in order to refuse entry. That is the law.
The
threshold is lower.
That is legislation.
I have the talking stick, as we call it in our family. Trent Zimmerman.
The conch.
You would do. Someone, you've got to have a talking stick in a noisy family.
I'm on a Lord of the Flies kind of guy.
On a not unrelated issue, Peter Dutton has accused Christina Keneally, the Shadow Home Affairs Minister, of wanting to bring these foreign terrorists into our country. Mm. Do you really think that's the case?
Well, you just have to go on what she said on Insiders last Sunday, where she basically said that we should be bringing back every woman and child held in an ISIS.
It's not quite what she said.
She said we should be bringing back all of the women and children that are held in those ISIS camps in Syria. Now, you might say it's a little bit old-fashioned because you're basically assuming that a woman wouldn't be involved in terrorist activities. Sadly, that's not the case. We have a great deal of sympathy, particularly for children that are held in those camps. But we also, at the end of the day, want to be able to make an assessment about whether any of those people, particularly adults, were involved in supporting ISIS.
So I think anyone who went to fight for ISIS, which was a barbaric, thuggish and evil regime, deserves to be very carefully looked at. We do have legislation in place. In fact, this government amended the Criminal Code Act 1995. They amended Chapter 8 of that to actually allow those people to come back on shore and be prosecuted. So be investigated and prosecuted if that was appropriate. Because remember, we have a large community of Yazidis, which in fact the Minister for Home Affairs has been, has been supportive of. So we actually enabled that. There is a principle in international law that you don't let people just roam around free because, of course, it's very porous. And as we can see in that region,
but do you really think all of these children should be brought home?
No, I think they should be looked at.
She clearly does think they should be screened. Why don't you?
But in the space of two sentences, she's gone from saying we should be dealing with them here to saying we should lock some there.
Your amended the Criminal Code Act.
Is that this is our problem with what Senator Keneally said. She basically said they should all be allowed to come back here and dealt with on shore.
You're the government. You amended that act.
Representing the alternative.
Do you think they should be screened and considered? Children. There are innocent children. Are you comfortable with...
what Peter Dutton was talking about.
I'm asking you.
I'm very...
whether you think children should be brought home.
Obviously, children aren't responsible for what they've
done. No, and do you think the government should do everything it can to try and bring them home?
Within the bounds of maintaining the safety of our own Australians that are in the field. And that is the difficulty we face. There is a lot of sympathy for those children and, in many cases, their mothers who have been dragged there like the children. But there are other women involved who happily supported ISIS, went there to support ISIS. But obviously, though, you're dealing with a very difficult situation there, particularly now. And so
Trent says there's a lot of nuance. There is a lot of nuance. There is a lot of risk for our special operators who would be the ones going in to retrieve these people. This is a very difficult and complex situation in that part of the world, made more complex because you've got various armies and militias fighting each other where they might not traditionally also be fighting. So these are very difficult matters. I don't think that our ADF personnel or the DFAT personnel should be put in any danger in retrieving. But we are signatories to international law. The government amended a piece of domestic legislation in order to deal with this situation that hasn't been done.
That's Liberal MP Trent Zimmerman and Labor MP Kimberley Kitching.